concept of the health as related to the total person. Each year we have an outstanding person in this area of scientific research and of interest. And this year we have invited Mr. Charles I. Cresselius. Mr. Cresselius is a native of the state of Wisconsin. He is a businessman in his present basic occupation. He graduated from the Plattsville Teachers College in Wisconsin with a Master of Science in the field of education. He is now residing in Los Angeles County and has served in many capacities there in the field of civic organizations, but I think that there are two that are of particular interest. The Committee for Citizens for Decent Literature, and then the Committee of 5,000 that deals with the gambling problems. And yet his major concern right now is in the field of the whole concept of health and the individual. Mr. Cresselius has served as a president of the National Health Federation, and in that capacity, he's really been serving full time on a dollar a year basis. Wish we had some staff and faculty here at the seminary that do that. Make my job a lot easier. I'm glad for this witness that he's going to make. Say, I forgot I'm one of the staff. We're delighted to have Mr. Cresselius with us. And he's brought his most charming asset with him, Mrs. Cresselius. And will you stand and take a bow, Mr. Cresselius? Now, Mr. Cresselius is going to bring two lectures to us. And the first one this morning will be on the challenge of good nutrition, a period of conflict and controversy. It is now my privilege to present to you Mr. Cresselius.
Thank you, Dr. Mayfield. You know, the delightful experience of driving through this beautiful country and visiting your lovely campus is just great. And to you, Dr. McPheeters, grateful that you're here today. The hospitality I've received from everybody is just great. I appreciate it. Today's subject is a serious one. It's a subject that has America buzzing. I want to perhaps go into as much of it as possible in the limited time this morning, and then this afternoon continue on in talking about the ecology, the threat to it, in talking about our health, the very right of us to exist with normal, healthy bodies. Wouldn't it be great, as they do in Hunzaland, to die of old age rather than disease? You know, they do it there, but they follow a different course in areas of nutrition than we do. Before I proceed further, I think I would like to first tell you just a little bit about the National Health Federation. It's an organization that has been in existence for some 17 years. And its basic function is to fight for a cause that we call health freedom. 17 years ago, we dealt with these health issues. All of them represented a minority point of view, and all of them were unpopular. So you can imagine our difficulties in those days of trying to get the ear or attention of anyone, including the legislators, who have to take action which either defends our freedoms or takes it from us. Now, the ecology was an issue we dealt with then. And imagine what change has taken place in these 17 years. It has happened that in the last two or three years, some polls have indicated that the matter of ecology and pollution of our environment has really risen to number one in the matter of concern of the people of this country. That's quite a change. Well, I guess I became interested when about 17 years ago, I learned that a man in Seattle had been arrested for telling somebody they could eat an apple and it would be good for their health. He was arrested and charged with practicing medicine without a license. Then I heard of a man in the state of Ohio who had shipped wheat interstate and was arrested and accused of the same thing but spent time in jail because supposedly the jury or the court or the judge said that he had practiced medicine without a license. Now, I thought in reference to our health freedoms, that was going a bit far. You see, this man was a health lecturer, and he knew more than most of the American people knew at that time, that if you take the kernel of wheat and you knock off the outside that contains all of the vitamins and minerals and life-giving oils, you're left with a pure carbohydrate substance, and then if you bleach that with a poison, you have something less than food. And this, of course, was becoming very popular in those days, or even before, back in the 1930s. White bread was the thing. You had to eat white bread. It was sociable. It was fashionable. And when I learned that these two events had taken place, I said to myself, there needs to be some dedicated effort to bring to the American people the injustice of this and point out to them the need for individual freedom of choice. Benjamin Rush, one of the founders of this country, he was living at the time of the Constitution, a medical doctor, said to the other founding fathers at that time, look, in addition to writing into our Constitution and Bill of Rights, the idea that we must have in this country a guarantee of freedom of speech, of press, and of religion, we must put in health. Well, you see, in the past, all of these freedoms I've just mentioned had been under attack, and there had been despots that had tried to take from the people their freedoms in these areas. But never had anyone attempted to take away from anybody his right to decide his own course in matters of health. And so the rest of the founding fathers said, why, that's ridiculous. That isn't necessary. And yet we come to the day in which you and I live, and a person can be arrested and put in jail for giving a lecture about wheat and then saying, I raise wheat organically. I don't put poison sprays or chemical fertilizers on the wheat I grow. And I've already told you in my lecture that if you eat the whole kernel of wheat, you get all the good that nature put there. So if you want to buy wheat from me, I'll ship it to you. Now, the government came and said, you didn't put on the label of that wheat you shipped interstate, the dosage. Now, if he had put on the dosage, it definitely would have been prescribing. So either way, he was through. It's interesting to know that this is common practice today, to bring people into court and to try them and to persecute them for their beliefs in health. So we don't have in this country health freedom. Now, every other organization or group in the country has a union of some kind to protect its interests. But the consumer of health, the one who eats the food, has not had that protection. And so 17 years ago, the National Health Federation was organized to do just that, to point out threats in our environment, in our ecology, in our food, which would help people be aware of some of the threats that face them. I notice out on the table there is a paper which indicates some of the nutrient deficiency signs. And if you'll grab that and look at the list, you'll find it's quite long. And I think you'd have to say that all of us have some of those symptoms at one time or another. I think the whole American scene is so designed that it's very difficult to get good nutrition. It's difficult to get the proper vitamins and minerals that are needed to maintain health. When I was attending college and took a course in physiology, we learned a phrase, C. Hopkins Cafe, which at that time indicated the names or the symbols for minerals and vitamins, which were absolutely essential for human health and human nutrition. But in life, in actual practice, we have taken those very substances out of the foods. We have processed them out. And we've done it in great abundance so that most of the items that you buy on the store shelf have been processed to the point of being devoid of nutrient. They represent maybe straight carbohydrate or something like that. The process of cooking kills many of the vitamins and destroys some of the mineral action that could take place in the body. It's like saying to somebody, do you get short of breath if you run up 5 flights of stairs? It happens to all of us. So we could say that some of these symptoms here are evident. Now for a moment, if we trace what's happened and the awakening that has come about in this country, because I've told you what it was like 17 years ago, but today it's different. I go into a store, into a city like Omaha, Nebraska, where 3 years ago there was one struggling health food store. Today there are 5 or 6. there's a tremendous explosion in the area of knowledge as to the value of vitamins and minerals. And most people who realize that their nutrition is being short-circuited have said to themselves, it's difficult for me to change my habits of eating. Therefore, I will supplement my diet with a food supplement, a mineral product. Now comes the controversy that I want to talk to you a little bit about. If you go way back to the situation where a man was arrested for shipping wheat interstate and served time in jail, that controversy existed because there was a system in control of the health of this nation which said, we alone have the right to tell you what is good for you in health matters. And therefore, if anybody else stands up and would give you any definite or specific recommendation as to what you need to do to prevent illness, to cure illness, then they're out of line and they are engaging in our practice. And the laws of every state and our federal law says you can't do that. Well, we come right down to today. Several years ago, Mr. Larrick, who was Commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration, proposed regulations which, in effect, would have taken from the people of this country the right to buy and purchase a high-potency multivitamin mineral product. People had been buying them for years. These substances were known to be non-toxic and harmless to living tissue. And yet the Food and Drug Administration had left on the market, free for anyone to go in and buy, no regulations posing against it, substances like the pill to avoid pregnancy. And yet if you looked at the list of side effects that could come from that, it fills half a page. I've talked to doctors who have diagnosed cases of minor strokes, and they've said to the woman involved, this was because you took the pill. But she didn't know it before she took the pill. Now, the Food and Drug will permit that to be sold openly at the drugstore without prescription. But they have made every effort to take and put the non-toxic, harmless food supplement in the prescription category. Now, if the regulations proposed by Mr. Larrick a few years ago had become law, you and I today could only buy one product, no matter where we went to buy. It would have been an impotent product with potencies restricted to such low levels that no one, unless they took handfuls of the food supplement, could come up with a high-potency product which they might want to take. Then came along Commissioner Goddard. By the way, our organization sent 17,000 communications to Washington, and we had a twofold purpose in that. We wrote to the Congress, and then the card said, Congressman, would you send this to the Commissioner of the Food and Drug, so that when it did finally reach Mr. Larrick, he knew that a congressman had first read it, which got double duty out of the cards that our people mailed to Washington. Then, because of that pressure, Mr. Larrick backed away from those regulations. Then came Commissioner Goddard about 3 years ago, and he said, we are going to put those regulations into effect. Now, the controversy exists in this field because throughout this nation, as I said, there's been a great awakening, knowledge of the value of vitamins and food supplements. And so people have been telling their neighbors and friends, look, if you don't feel too well, you should try to increase your nutritional quality by taking some vitamins or minerals. People started to take them in increasing numbers. And as a result, the health establishment that's in control in this nation said, look, we have to stop this. We can't let lay people, we can't let chiropractors, we can't let others begin to solve the health needs of the people of this country. So since they're using the vehicle of vitamins now to do it with, we must take this from them. We're in a period right now of rather uncertainty in this whole area because after 2 years of hearings, the National Health Federation had a medical doctor at those hearings every day representing the people of this country and their right to purchase and use these non-toxic substances. He was brilliant. He was brilliant in his cross-examination because he pointed out very clearly that all of those who came to witness for the government had been selected by the government because of their point of view, because they were known to favor the government's position and they could be counted upon to say that the American people don't know enough about food supplements to make a wise choice. Therefore, they shouldn't have the right to make that choice. So freedom was denied on that very simple premise. And in cross-examination, it was found that all of these who testified had received grants either from industry or from the government, which meant that, in effect, they had been sort of bought and paid for before their appearance before that hearing committee. Now it's been a couple years since those hearings were held. We had expected that Commissioner Goddard would immediately put the regulations into effect because the hearings were not for the purpose of seeking truth. They were for the purpose of justifying the action which the Food and Drug Administration wanted to take. Now, those regulations haven't been put into effect. And I think the only salvation has been the tremendous awakening that's taken place in this country, the tremendous increase in the knowledge about nutrition, the use of food supplements in the diet, and the great numbers of people that have joined the awakening throng have been enough pressure to the Food and Drug Administration so they haven't proceeded in putting those regulations into effect. We see something else happening, though, at the present time. They are starting to take one vitamin at a time, one mineral at a time, taking the ones that are least popular in this country and placing the restriction on just one at a time to find out if, in fact, they can get away with piecemeal putting in effect the regulations I mentioned. I don't think they are going to accomplish that. I don't think they're going to make out. Perhaps you haven't heard of the National Health Federation before, but in our bulletin, and this goes to all of our members, membership in the Federation is $5. This bulletin is educational, but it also lets people know when they need to take action to solve the health problem in this country. This letter was to Mr. Clinton Miller, our Washington legislative advocate. It was from Warren G. Magnuson, one of the very powerful senators in the United States. He said, as you probably know by now, S-3419 passed the Senate by a vote of 69 to 10. The legislation creates a new independent food, drug, and consumer product agency. One of the commissions which is established is a commission on foods and nutrition. And by the way, this bill would eliminate the Food and Drug Administration, and in its place it would set up three separate departments. Originally, one of the departments would be called the Commission on Foods. We suggested to Senator Magnuson that it be on foods and nutrition because this country has never emphasized nutrition in any of its health activities. And the senator agreed, and so the word is in here, foods and nutrition, because of a suggestion from our organization. He says in his letter, a provision which the National Health Federation advocated. I want to acknowledge the work that both you and the National Health Federation have done in promoting this legislation. My office alone received literally thousands of letters from your members throughout the entire country. In speaking with my colleagues, they also informed me that they have received numerous letters from your members. Both you and your organization can take pride in this significant victory, Senator Magnuson. And so what we have done there is to say to the Congress, if the Food and Drug Administration is going to be involved with so many vested interests and represent the interests of these commercial accounts rather than the interests of the people and their welfare, then we believe that that department should be done away with. And what we hope to accomplish here is that a commission of foods and nutritions be set up so that food supplements, which really are foods essential to nutrition, can be included in that category. Now, if that happens, we don't believe that there can be any more harassment to those who want to take food supplements, who want to sell them, or who want to talk about them. Because in this instance, presently, the Food and Drug Administration, when it wishes to persecute anyone who's dealing in food supplements, can come, take them, and immediately make this charge I've spoken of, you're practicing medicine without a license. No, they're dealing in foods. And so we want to then see that this substance, which could reasonably be called foods and really are foods, put in the food category where it can be safe and it can mean freedom of choice for us in this country to use that the way they want to. Well, tracing the history and development a little further, in 1950, when Representative Delaney held some congressional hearings investigating the chemicals in our food supply, this was one of the great breakthroughs. Because up to then, these substances were being added to our foods, none of them really to improve the quality. They were preservatives, they were coloring agents, they were to make it taste, smell, feel better. These were to preserve the life of that food, and they hadn't been tested to see what harm they do to man. And just this past year, we found out a good many of these substances in our foods that are cancer-producing or cause some other drastic influence on the health of our people. Now, Several laws regulating the use of chemicals in and on foods came out of that first investigation. The first law was in 1954, when Congress set tolerance levels for chemical insecticides sprayed on foods for human consumption. Now, if you can imagine before that time, as many chemicals as we use in spraying on our food supply in this country, there were no limits as to what the residue might be. In the days of Senator Kennedy, one of his scientific advisory groups estimated that there were, in the average human in this country, there were 12 parts per million DDT stored in the fat tissue of their body. Later on, in another 5 years or so, there were deaths in Central California in areas where the DDT wasn't being sprayed, which indicated that almost 50 parts per million in the dead bodies where autopsies were taken. And it wasn't known whether that was a contributing factor to the death of the individual or not. You see, most of what we've done without knowing. And that's another tragedy. Well, then in 1958 came along a Delaney amendment, which was great, because it said that no cancer-producing substance could be added to any of our foods. It would be illegal. And you know that today the Food and Drug Administration still looks on while we have sodium nitrite in our meats, so that the bolognese and so on can hang in the open for weeks and months and stay red and nice. But they found that that's cancer-producing in test animals. And this is the principle on which we determine whether a product is safe for man or not. We take test animals and we feed the substances, or we inject in some way. We put the substances in the test animal, the mice, the rat, the guinea pig. And if he succumbs to cancer or some other horrible thing, then we say, let's leave it out of man's food. That's what the Delaney Amendment said, and the Food and Drug Administration has not acted against sodium nitrite. DDT is definitely identified as cancer-producing. It's still being used in this country, and it does get in our food supply. It circles the earth, as Rachel Carson said, and falls out wherever it will. And we have a lot more to do, a lot more to accomplish before we can say to ourselves that we have made America safe for our people and that our food supply is an adequate one. Often you've heard that animals are treated better than humans in the reference to the food they eat. And that comes out in many different statements from many different sources. Here's one. It says, with regard to calcium and phosphorus nutrition, it can safely be said that the average U.S. horse, cow, pig, dog, and cat are far better cared for than the average U.S. human being. And one of the results of that situation is that 20 million Americans have no teeth in their mouths, say the authors of the above statement. And these are MDs or PhDs that have conducted that study and research. Now, this sheet out on the table that identifies for you vitamin deficiencies and what they produce in your body might confuse you a little bit, because if you feel you have some of these symptoms and begin to take the vitamin that could correct it, and you don't see any beneficial results, there are reasons why perhaps your system, unless you have total nutrition, cannot accommodate just one substance to correct a problem. And I'll discuss later a few reasons why it might be that certain people who take vitamins and who may be needing them desperately aren't really getting the benefit from them they should be getting. There are many who have been in the forefront of this awakening move. They have included medical doctors, dentists, nutritionists, chiropractors, and lay people. They have sounded an alarm. They have pulled out the research that's been buried. See, it's rather difficult for the present medical system to feature nutrition. First of all, their training is underwritten and paid for by either the drug company or by the great food companies, which have processed the life out of the food they sell. Now, it isn't reasonable to even expect that these companies will be supporting and financing and paying for a real sound program of education for our medical doctors of nutrition. It would be against their best interest. And that's where the conflict arises. It's one of vested interest. But there are certain things that, in order to be healthy, we must have. And there are other things that we must avoid if we're going to be healthy people. Linus Pauling wrote a book on vitamin C in the common cold. That book caused a shortage of vitamin C in the free world, and perhaps even behind the Iron Curtain. And I knew of food supplement manufacturers that were desperately trying to get a hold of some of the vitamin C, and they couldn't. When we visited Australia last year to start the National Health Federation there, That book was being serialized in the Sunday Australian so that everybody in Australia who wished could read it. He pointed out a number of things in that book. And when I got the book to read, I thought, well, this is a report on his personal experience. It wasn't. It was a report on the research that had been done by competent medical authorities and universities and hospitals throughout the nation. He pointed out that if you take a very high potency of vitamin C, higher than anybody had really been talking much about before, that you could really create some marvelous results. One of the things, you could pretty well eliminate scar tissue. He said that often cigar smokers have cancer of the bladder, and this very high potency of vitamin C could cause a regression of that bladder cancer. That's quite a strong statement, but it was backed up by research. In our bulletin, in one of them, there was a summary of articles with some, I think about 40 references, 38 references cited, making up. There are lists here of 20 different things, and then other lists of things that medical doctors and others have used vitamin C for, certain illnesses, certain weaknesses of the body. That list is very exciting and interesting, and as you look into vitamin C, you'll find that is one of the great finds. It is one of the vitamins that is selling at the greatest amounts in this country today, along with vitamin E. Now, Dr. Shute in Canada, who discovered vitamin E, found out that it could do some marvelous things in the healing of wounds. There are those that have said it's the sex vitamin. There are those who have said it's the heart vitamin. Actually, what it does is to help every cell in the body in the process of oxidation. So since the heart is the most important muscle, and when it stops, we stop, it has helped that muscle and that tissue as well as every other tissue in the body, and so has been identified as a special vitamin for the heart. Now, the Department of Agriculture, who doesn't have to represent the same vested interests as the Food and Drug Administration, has carried on studies which completely established the fact that this nation is very short in nutrition, vitamins, minerals, and other substances. And with that armed as evidence, we move forward then to people like Dr. Beeler, who's a medical doctor in Capistrano Beach, California. Dr. Beeler was a practicing physician in Pasadena, California. He told me that as a medical doctor, he lost his health. And then he said, I had to figure out how to regain it. Now, Gloria Swanson will attribute her longevity to having contacted Dr. Beeler after he learned something about nutrition. If you go to Dr. Beeler today, he takes you off of every kind of pill you're on. And he says, we're going to get down to basic nutrition. We have seen patients go to him, patients that had cancer, other illnesses. We've seen them begin to improve. He would probably put them on green beans and zucchini squash and have them eat nothing but that for days at a time. They'd come back and plead with him, doctor, may I add something else to it? And you can't blame them for that. But he was doing that because these two vegetables are highest in potassium. And he had figured out that the natural potassium is better even than the food supplement. And so what we really are after, if we can learn, is to find out what foods contain life-giving substances we need. Now, short of that, we move one step beyond and say, well, we can get some of these things in food supplements if we're not on a proper diet. And that is what Dr. Beeler is doing. Now, Dr. Sharaskin, a dentist and an MD who is professor at the University of Alabama, has written a book, New Hope for Incurable Diseases. I was down at our annual convention in St. Petersburg this last spring. One man who looked the picture of health came up to me, and he said, I used to have multiple sclerosis. Well, now the medical profession has not cured a case of multiple sclerosis, to my knowledge. And he looked the picture of health. He was as steady as he could be. I said, how did you accomplish that? He said, well, basically, I followed the program in Dr. Sharaskin's book. He said, we've added a few innovations to it, but basically, it's his program, New Hope for Incurable Diseases. He said, last week, we had our fifth wheelchair burning. And that was the signal that somebody else had improved enough from their multiple sclerosis so they could leave the wheelchair. Now, you see, these bits of information are attacked by the orthodox approach to health. They sent me a clipping from the University of Alabama of a local group that had organized just to fight Dr. Sharaskin. And they added some nutrition name to their effort to destroy Dr. Sharaskin's effort to inform the people about a healthier and a better way of life. And it, letters from this group had appeared in the local newspaper. And they appealed to me if I wouldn't write a counter letter, which I did, and mailed to the newspaper, and said it's much easier to tear down and to criticize than it is to build. And in this case, based on my research and my checking on the results, Dr. Sharaskin has been the creative person, and those who attack him are on the other side. There's a dentist by the name of Dr. Royal Lee, who years ago was a forerunner in announcing nutrition as the answer to the health problems of this nation. I sat by Dr. Royal Lee when he used to attend our National Health Federation conventions, and we all thought we were doing it right because we knew that whole wheat bread contained those vitamins and minerals we needed. And we all sat there and ordered our whole wheat bread while he was ordering white bread. And he knew we were looking at him in an odd way. So he said to us, you know, he said, I used to do the same thing. But he said, unless I know the source of the whole wheat and when it was ground, he said, I don't eat whole wheat bread. He said, I prefer to take the chance with white bread when I'm out. Of course, he shouldn't have eaten anything in the way of white bread, but he did. He said, do you know how many poisons it takes to preserve whole wheat? Because, you see, the bugs really want it. They don't bother this bleached white flour much because there's no nutrition in it for them, as there's no nutrition in it for you or me. But you take that whole wheat flour and grind it up with those vitamins and minerals, and the bugs are after it immediately, so you've got to load it with so many different kinds of poisons. He says, that's the reason I don't eat it when I'm out. He said, I suspect that rancid oils are more the cause of cancer in this nation than anything else. That's one approach, and it could well be, because the better the oil, the more real food value there is in it, the quicker it goes rancid, the quicker it oxidizes. If it oxidizes outside your body, pray tell what's left for it to do when it gets inside. Because the basic life process is oxidation. And the food, when it gets in, should go through the process of oxidation, life-giving within the cell. But we take a food like peanut butter, and we stabilize it. We hook on hydrogen where oxygen should go. And what do you think happens to that when it gets in the body? And so our food supply has been tampered with. But you see, we let it sit around so long that we've got to do these things to it. Or you could smell that that peanut butter was rancid when you bought it. You could smell it and you say, I won't buy that. It's rancid. Now, I don't know for sure which is worse. Whether when we take and hook hydrogen on and take out of the possibility of that peanut butter the right to do its job, the job it should do when it gets inside of you, or should we let it go rancid and eat it that way? The answer is neither. We can't afford to do the things we've been doing. But Dr. Royal Lee compiled so much evidence on good nutrition and made it available to so many people that he certainly had to be considered a forerunner. I was in Mexico. We visited Taxco, a little town of 5,000. The guide took us around. He spoke English well. We went to the marketplace, and there were flies on the meat and on the vegetables. And I looked at that, and I said, we couldn't possibly live here and survive. And I said, how many people in this town do you think there are living over 100 years of age? And he thought, and he counted up to 12 in a little town of 5,000. And he said, I know of that many, but he said, I know there are more than that. Now, why could that be true? Now, they don't have the longevity we have because the sanitation knocks off children and babies and infants. But once you survive that period, and once you've overcome some of the bugs, your nutrition is sound. They grow corn all over those hillsides, and most of them have to grind it the day they eat it. And the nutrition is there. It's not destroyed. The oils aren't oxidized. The vitamins aren't destroyed. And so those people do get the nutrition that we don't get. Because the first thing they do with our corn is to take the life out of it and give us the rest. And they feed the wheat germ to the hogs normally. So they are in much better shape than we are. We are being led down a wrong road. We have the preservatives and additives in our foods that alone could cause the tremendous rate of increase in degenerative diseases in this country that have almost reached epidemic proportions. I was in Australia and they said, are we like you are? And I said, well, I just read in your newspaper last week that you're number 4 in heart attacks in the world. We're number 1, so you're pretty close to us. And cancer, any of these degenerative diseases you want to look at, are really something. Let me just tell you a little bit about a book here I think everybody ought to read. It's the Chemical Feast, Ralph Nader's study group report. It's on the chemicals in our food. And here in the introduction, Ralph Nader writes it, Dr. Gene Mayer, nutrition advisor to President Nixon, has pointed out that 20-year-old men could live in 36 foreign countries and live longer than if they continue to live in the United States. Now, that doesn't represent improvement. That represents us going in the wrong direction. Now, if you had a football coach or a basketball coach who was leading us down the wrong road, and where our record in comparison with countries like Sweden or Denmark, where their situation is improving, you probably would change coaches. Now, we haven't given that any consideration at this point at all. Do you know that Sweden banned DES in their meat way back in 1970? They began to look at it. Diethylstilbestrol, DES. They feed it to beef cattle to make them grow faster and fatter so that they have a few more pounds on when they go to market. That's the only reason it's given them. Now, that brings a little more money. So, again, you have a vested interest accomplishing this. Right at the same time, in 1970, when Sweden was putting the ban on meat with hormones coming into the country, the U.S. government was doubling the dose permitted in beef in this country. Now, there's an interesting story of what has happened in the Congress. The Food and Drug Administration was going through the usual procedure of setting up hearings on DES. But the newspaper headline said, Food and Drug moves to ban DES. They didn't. They moved to hold hearings on DES. And then Senator Kennedy's committee, with Senator Proxmire from Wisconsin introducing the bill before his committee to ban DES in this country, held a hearing. And the top-level people of Food and Drug sat out there, and Senator Kennedy had done his homework on this particular issue. And the questions that were asked were answered extremely poorly. And Kennedy showed his disgust at the answers that came. And the push that came from that hearing moved the bill through the Senate in a matter of days. The Food and Drug Administration then saw what was happening, and rather than be outdone or outvoted themselves, they took the move and they said, we will ban DES. They did it under pressure. They didn't do it willingly. And we feel, in our observation, that we will have DES back on our hands very shortly, and we will have to go the full route through Congress to get it banned from this country. And while we were saying that, oh, you couldn't do without DES as a feed in our beef cattle, the other two largest beef-producing countries in the world, Argentina and Australia, had banned it. They haven't been using it. So they've proven to us that you could grow beef cattle, and we proved it to ourselves before we started to feed it. Just another bit of evidence of the careless way in which we treat our food supply. Do you know that chicken feed contains arsenic? I'll tell you the reason. Same reason that we fed beef cattle DES. The arsenic makes the chicken sick. And so the waste is not properly eliminated from the body. So fluids, particularly, that should be eliminated are stored in the body. The chicken weighs more. When it goes to market, it brings more money. That's the reason. Now, what else does it do? We have a lot of cumulative poisons we play with like this in feeding our food supply or even in our own food supply. Arsenic is cumulative poison. We've known it for our lifetimes. When it gets in the chicken, it does this damage, but then cumulative means it's stored someplace in the body, like DDT is stored in the fat tissue, and fluoride is stored in the bone structure because it has an affinity for calcium and so on. This is stored in the liver. Arsenic is stored in the liver, and I like to ask an audience that I speak to about health and nutrition, have you had your chicken livers lately? Because if you have, there's every possibility that you are getting your concentration of this deadly substance, arsenic. Now, bodies, see, these aren't acute poisons. Acute means you take something, you're dead in the morning, you say, uh-oh, we've got to avoid that. Now, these poisons are much more subtle. They're storing in our bodies. Or some of them are being eliminated, but in the process of being eliminated, being processed out by the liver, which has to do most of the processing of the body, we're putting a load on our system that breaks it down. I know of nutritionists now that are saying that glands aren't functioning in bodies in this country like they used to. Enzymes are very delicate substances. Enzymes are absolutely essential in your body for the proper digestion and assimilation of food. And there are many of these chemicals that we take in that are causing enzymes to be destroyed. And so these nutritionists will say that after the age of 30 or 35, it's probable that everybody in the country, or most people, should be taking enzymes to supplement the enzymes that they've lost. But people go through life eating about the same size meals. But if their glands began to produce less and less of the substances needed to digest that food and make it usable for the body, then perhaps that should be replaced so that we can have the proper use of foods. Now that, I suspect, is the first thing that breaks down in the body. And at the present time, there is an approach, not through the organized medical channels, but through those who have studied nutrition, who feel that the taking of pancreatic enzymes by the cancer patient, and that's rather high dosage of pancreatic enzymes, might be a very, very helpful thing. It's their feeling that perhaps the cancer victim is starving for protein, that the pancreatic enzymes normally produced in the intestinal area to digest protein are not there anymore, that these substances in the normal healthy body are not only there in quantities to digest the food, but there's some excess which more or less saturates every cell in the body, and if a cell anyplace wants to go wild and grow rampant, this protein digestant attacks it and destroys it before it can create a malignancy. But these things that I say now in reference to cancer aren't being studied or researched by any agency, any health department at state, federal, or local level. They're not permitted to. In fact, one of the very promising things in the treatment of cancer, a substance called laetrile, which is really a vitamin B17 and therefore harmless and non-toxic, and proven so in test animals. The right to test this has been denied anybody in the United States. This treatment is available in Mexico. Dr. Dean Burke was quoted in a San Francisco paper recently as criticizing the government for not testing this substance, not permitting it to be tested. You know, it would be tested at private expense. There are medical doctors, patients, and others standing by, ready and waiting and wanting to give this test. It's the only way we'll ever know for sure. But the results might be too damaging to those who wish to continue to control what health practices we follow. Now, Dr. Burke is a longtime American cancer investigator. He is a man who now has, I guess, the most seniority in the National Cancer Institute in Washington, which gives him a pretty privileged position. He says, the trouble with you is you've been brainwashed. He said this to the reporters who were challenging him and saying, well, what about this substance? Why are you for it? And he says, I'm not saying it's a cancer treatment. I'm saying it deserves a test. And in this country today, there isn't enough health freedom to permit, just to permit anyone to test a non-toxic substance like a vitamin B17 for the treatment of cancer. Well, the megavitamin mineral theory in the treatment of disease is fast becoming known and understood and used. There are mental health clinics in the United States that are using this treatment to cure schizophrenia, for example. This is another thing that the psychiatrists have had difficulty in working with. It's mainly high-potency vitamin C and high-potency niacin, which is one of the B complex. And if you study this issue a little further, I might just report to you some research done at the University of California. Campbell at the University of California says this. He recognizes the nervous system as being more sensitive to nutritional variants than any other part of the body. And yet the organized, orthodox approach to the treatment of mental illness never looks at nutrition. Never. Those who are looking at nutrition as a means of solving some of the mental illness in this country are virtually outcasts from their professions. And I say to you, they won't be too much longer because we're not going to tolerate it. We're going to say to the people of this country and to the Congress that we deserve every opportunity to seek health and to find it wherever it's available. Well, Campbell, among others, emphasizes the essential role of B-complex vitamins in carbohydrate metabolism, which furnishes energy for nerve functioning. He points out that minerals are required by nerve tissue not only for its respiratory functions, but also to maintain the electrolyte balance in the fluid media, and so on. Now, the dominant interest may at first appear to be mainly in vitamin research, partly because vitamins more directly and immediately affect the nervous system than do other nutrients. And further, in some other cases, it was found that B6, that particular B vitamin, could correct very quickly complaints including extreme nervousness, insomnia, irritability, abdominal pains, weakness, and difficulty in walking. They sound like quite serious symptoms. Within 4 hours after injection of 50 milligrams of B6, the subjects experienced dramatic relief, and within 24 hours, the symptoms disappeared. Now, there are great individual differences in people. And what's one man's poison may be another man's meat. We cannot say that these substances do not seriously harm people that we've added into our food supply. The story of cyclamates brings that out. Again, the Food and Drug Administration took reluctant action to ban cyclamates as an artificial sweetener. Cyclamates had been known for some 4 years to cause cancer in test animals, test rats. And yet it was waited till Dr. Verrett within the Food and Drug Administration carried on her own experiments, found this to be true, and then asked some superior in the Food and Drug if she had a right to release this information to the press. Now, in a weak moment, somebody said, yes, you can. And because it then received such publicity, the Food and Drug had to proceed in following the Delaney Amendment requirement, since it was cancer-producing, to ban cyclamates as an artificial sweetener. But immediately they began to make fun of the action they'd taken. They said, well, wasn't that silly? Isn't it silly to have to do that? And an attack came upon the Delaney Amendment to try and eliminate that as the law. They said, why, a man would have to drink, or anyone, far more than they ever would in the normal diet in order to have this harm them. And yet Dr. Huper, who was also in government service, and many, many other people have maintained that you can take any amount of a carcinogen, even a very minute amount, and you can't eliminate it from the system. It will have its deadly effect if it's 5, 10, 15, or 20 years later, that you have done the damage by taking it into the system. And you can't talk in terms of, oh, it's not enough to harm, it's not enough to bother. And so, in this regard, the Food and Drug tried to discredit its own action. It didn't succeed, because at the same time, there was a bill introduced by Senator Gaylord Nelson of Wisconsin trying to strengthen the Delaney Amendment, trying to cover more illnesses than just cancer in the way of what damage might be done by certain additives and preservatives in our food supply. And so we won that victory. But in Japan in 1966, scientists discovered that one out of every three people, this substance changes to another more deadly substance within their bodies, cyclohexylamine, which is known to be very harmful to people. So one out of every three sitting in this room could have within their system certain processes which would change cyclamates into a very, very harmful, damaging substance in their body. The other two could get by, perhaps. And so was Dr. Roger Williams, who pointed out to us that we are all so different that we can't give one diagnosis and one prescription to all of us, that we're so individual we have to be careful and, in a sense, work out a little of our own salvation. We'll be at it this afternoon on some more of these issues. I'm about a third done, but we'll try to finish this afternoon. Thank you very much for coming.